says he's going to do during the millennial reign. And we had just finished the 47th chapter of Ezekiel, or at least large parts of it. We had gone in the 47th chapter of Ezekiel, and we had gone all the way down from verses 1 through 8. We've been talking about the way that God's going to change the water system in Israel. Now, to some people, this is not interesting at all. What I try to do, I try to go along with the congregation as much as I can. And if I find out that something, there's some little something they don't like TV or movies or stuff like that, I just don't do it. But there's some things I can't do that on. You see, when it comes to this, it's in the Bible. And God indicates he's going to go through a lot of geological gyrations, tremendous shakings of the earth, to change the water system of Israel. And when the water system is changed, it's going to cause, for 1,000 years, it's going to cause people that are there in physical bodies, not us, but the people there in physical bodies will have water, the desert will blossom as a rose, it's going to be a wonderful, marvelous time. So we ought to be interested in these things, because it shows the hand of God. And when we realize how meticulous God is in planning in advance, and how powerful he is to carry it out, we not only respect him for his ability to do great and terrible things to the earth, but we appreciate him because he always has a plan in what he's doing. So we've been talking about this, and we finished up with Joel 3:18. This shall come to pass in that day that the mountain shall drop down new wine. It means that even the abundance of wild grapes on the mountain will bring forth grape juice. And the hill shall flow with milk. It pictures a scene of pastoral wonder. It pictures more food and more things to drink and an abundance of food like Israel has never seen. Now, most of the rivers of Judah are what you call wadis, and they only flow during the rainy season. But this indicates that they're going to flow continuously. And all the rivers of Judah shall flow with waters, and a fountain, a spring, shall come forth of the house of the Lord, and shall water the valley of Shittim. Now, Ezekiel indicates that, well, Zechariah indicates the Mount of Olives is going to split, as you see here. Ezekiel indicates in the 47th chapter that a spring is going to come out here and go 4,000 cubits or 6,000 feet and link up with a great river. In a few moments, we're going to talk about which great river that is. Zechariah then indicates part of it will go out to the Hinder Sea, the Mediterranean Sea, as you see here. And the other part of it will go down through the desert and empty into what we call the Red Sea through the Gulf of Aqaba, which is the northern extension of the Red Sea. He's going to form a bird's foot delta in here. This will make this like the Fertile Crescent. It'll make it as fertile as the land down on the Mississippi Delta or on the headwaters of the Nile, not the headwaters, but the place where it empties into the Mediterranean Sea. So it says, and a spring, a fountain, shall come forth of the house of the Lord and shall water the valley of Shittim. Well, Zechariah brings it out of here. And Ezekiel brings it out of here, and Joel brings it out of here. So three different prophets that did not know each other all talk about the water, and they all put it coming out of the same place because they're all superintended by the same Holy Spirit. Now today we're going to begin to talk about Isaiah 11:15, and we're going to talk about Revelation 16:12, and I doubt if we'll get down to Isaiah 35:5, 8, and 9. But all three of these are written by Isaiah and John. And they describe what God is going to do with the land as he moves these massive pieces of the earth's crust that float on underground liquid lakes of rock called magma. And as he does this, he's going to transform the land of Israel into the most fertile place on earth. It's going to become the breadbasket of the world. So we're going to take a look at scripture number 7, 8, and 9. Isaiah 11:15, the Lord shall utterly destroy the tongue of the Egyptian sea, and with his mighty wind shall he shake his hand over the river, and shall smite it in the seven streams, and make men go over dry shot. Now the tongue of the Egyptian sea is that little tiny section of land that we'll be looking at in a moment that sticks up right through here. That's the tongue of the Egyptian sea. The Suez Canal was dug right here to the Mediterranean to connect it some time ago, but this is the tongue of the Egyptian sea. So it says God's going to destroy this. Utterly destroy, the words that are used mean to crush or to grind to powder. What he's going to do is push this whole Sinai Peninsula up against the African continent and make this a dry land bridge. Now, and with his mighty wind shall he shake his hand over the river. The river is the Euphrates River. Anytime you see a definite article used in front of river, And it doesn't tell you which river it is above it or below it. It's always the Euphrates in the Old Testament. He's going to make this go bone dry and allow men to go over dry shod, just wearing sandals. It doesn't mean that the river bottom will be bone dry. It means that it will be able, people can go across in sandals. Now, in Revelation 16:12, he tells you the same thing. And the sixth angel poured out his vial over the great river Euphrates, and the waters thereof were dried up, that the way of the kings of the east might be prepared. He's going to make it dry shod. He says so in Isaiah. He says so in Revelation. Now, in Isaiah 34:5, 8, and 9, we probably won't get to that today, so I'm not going to talk about that at first. But we're going to take a close look at those two scriptures, and we're going to take a look at what I believe it means and why. God made the earth. God owns, operates, and controls it. And when God made the earth, he did some very interesting things. In geological terms and in geological circles, there is a thing called upper headwater stream piracy. It means that one stream robs the other part of the stream suddenly from the headwater system. The headwater system of the Euphrates River is way up in Turkey. It moves very rapidly up here because of the mountains. It's a very steep gradient. It moves very rapidly. It cuts a lot of silt off the side of the mountains. All dirt is rock. It's the erosion of rock on the surface of the earth. Now it has some things in it now that have to do with animal deterioration and death of different things that are of a botanical nature. But basically, dirt is nothing but extremely highly powdered rock. So the Euphrates comes right down through here. Now it goes 90 miles an hour through here, but all of a sudden right here, it just hits a flat plain and the gradient, the speed of the water decreases, and from there on it's a very slow moving stream. God is going to divert the Euphrates River during the tribulation period right across here. Now, the reason I'm so sure of it is because he says this part's going to go dry. And because he's already structured this area to do exactly what he said, he made it that way geologically. It's quite different from the area on both sides of it. It's going to go into the northern headwater tributary system of the Jordan, and it's going to go all the way down through here. Now, when the tongue of the Egyptian Sea over here is crushed to ground to powder, this Sinai plate, which floats on the underground liquid lakes of rock called magma, is going to actually be pushed over here and crushed against the African continent. When God rips open the valley that I've shown you so many times, this thing here has to move and pushes against here and makes a dry land bridge. Eventually, we'll get around to God's purpose for making that dry land bridge. We'll get around to God's purpose for drying up the Euphrates River. It has several purposes, and we'll find those in scriptures as we go through here. But for right now, I'm just kind of giving you a preview of all this. So when he says, and the sixth angel poured out his vial upon the great river Euphrates, and the water thereof was dried up, that the way of the kings of the east might be prepared. Virtually every Bible commentator, Jack Van Impe, Hal Lindsey, Tim LaHave, and all the rest on television, swear up and down that the kings of the east are Red China. I do not believe that. The kings of the east are those sons, the six sons of Keturah. After Sarah died, Abraham had six sons by Keturah, and he sent them away into the east. The kings of the east live right in here. You don't have to go all the way to communist China. And this is not talking about when the Red Chinese come across and attacked Israel in the Battle of Armageddon. Do I believe the Red Chinese are going to come across and attack Israel at the Battle of Armageddon? Yes, I do. But I don't believe that's what this is talking about. This is talking about that during the millennial reign, which follows the tribulation period, these kings that live in here will be able to come across and worship Jesus Christ, the returned Messiah, in Jerusalem without having to cross this river here. You'll see later on why I'm convinced it's not the Red Chinese. Now, again, we have in Isaiah 11, and the Lord shall utterly destroy the tongue of the Egyptian Sea. Again, this little narrow thing here is the tongue of the Egyptian Sea. Now, since men have dug the Suez Canal through here, it would also include the Suez Canal today, and indicates that he's going to grind it to powder. Once he does this, it will be possible for the people on the African continent to come across on dry land without having any water barrier between them and coming up into Israel. Isaiah 11. And the Lord shall utterly destroy the tongue of the Egyptian sea, and with his mighty wind shall he shake his hand over the river, that's the Euphrates, as in Revelation 6:12, and shall smite it in the seven streams and make men go over dry shod. We're going to talk about those seven streams. I think you'll find it interesting. Now in Isaiah 11:16, continuing, and there shall be a highway for the remnant of his people. That's the returning Jews from all over Africa, from all over Europe, from all over Asia, in the beginning phase of the millennial reign. And there shall be an highway for the remnant of people, which shall be left from Assyria, that's over here, this is Assyria, like as it was to Israel on the day he came up out of the land of Egypt. He came up out of the land of Egypt over here. You'll have a dry land bridge here. You'll have a dry land bridge here. And the kings of the east can come across and worship in the millennial temple for 1,000 years. They can come up off the African continent. They can travel by foot. They will not have to cross any major water body. And that's why God's doing all this, to prepare the way for his son's worship during the millennial reign. Now, this is from Hebrew University in Jerusalem. I first came in contact with this in about 1974, that general time frame. And this is from the Israeli Geological Survey in Israel, out of Tel Aviv. Notice the solid lines on here are false. Notice the lines with a little tiny cross around them, a little tiny line crossing. Notice that those are folds. Now, faults and folds are structural weaknesses in the crust of the earth where God has pushed it together. Sometimes a fault will develop where there'll be a long crack that will go all the way down through the earth. Sometimes mountains are formed like accordions where you push the rock strata together. Those are folds. Well, anywhere the rock has folded into what you call an anticline that goes up like this, or a syncline that goes down like this, it's weakened the rock strata. So both faults and folds are structural weaknesses in the crust of the earth that are not as strong as the area around them. Now, you notice here, you see this black thing that says volcanics. That means that in this huge black area you see here, that is an area where, in the past, volcanic activity just came up and flooded this area. So what you've got are a solid, huge area of volcanic rock. This is the huge area of volcanic rock. You'll notice it's south of this area. Up here in Lebanon, north of Lebanon, and up toward Turkey, you've got another huge volcanic area. Those areas are very stable. They're very strong. If you have an earthquake in this type of strata, where you have this volcanic activity in the past, it's just a slight tremor. And if you've got your house firmly anchored into this, it won't do that much damage. So you've got a very strong area here where it would be very difficult to cause it to break apart. You've got the same thing up here north of this area. Now notice this blue line. That's the Euphrates River. Notice that between the Euphrates River and the upper headwater tributary system of the Jordan, here's the Dead Sea. The Sea of Galilee is right here. This is the section down here that's going to rip open all the way up here. Down here is what we call the tongue of the Egyptian Sea. Whenever this rips open, the Sinai Peninsula will be jammed up against the African continent to form a dry land bridge. At the same time, the tremendous earthquake that's going to occur here, it's in the book of Revelation, there are several of them, then this is going to break apart. Whenever you have an area like this, you see all these different folds and faults in there, and you notice it's just right here in this area. Notice how it connects the Euphrates with the upper headwater tributary system of the Jordan. When the great earthquakes begin to occur in there, this will begin to spread apart and to widen. It will cause the Euphrates River to come right across here, go down here, go into the upper headwater tributary system of the Jordan. It's going to flush out the salt content of the Dead Sea. And you talk about roll, Jordan, roll. And you talk about Israel having more water than she knows what to do with. She's going to have more water than she knows what to do with for 1,000 years. Because the Euphrates River, which is a very great river, will dry up from here down to here, just like God said. And instead it will flow right across here like this. And Israel is going to become the food supplier of the world. She's already got one of the most fertile soil profiles in the world today. Now, this Euphrates River Valley is an interesting valley. And it was the place where Noah, his wife, Ham, Shem, and Japheth, those 8 people, came down after the flood and settled it. In Genesis 11, 6 through 7. And the Lord said, "Behold, the people is one, and they all have one language. And this they began to do, and now nothing will be restrained from them which they have imagined to do. Let us go down, and there confound their language, that they may not understand one another's speech." This was the cradle of our existing civilization. So the Lord scattered them abroad from thence upon the face of the earth, and they left off to build a city. After the flood, the Bible says that the ark came down on the mountains of Ararat. It doesn't say it came down on Mount Ararat. It says it came down on the mountains of Ararat. We don't know which one. And so it came down off these mountains, and 8 people came across here. Naturally, they're going to pick the place where they have food. They can produce food where there is food and where there's water. So they came right down this Tigris-Euphrates River Valley, and they settled right in here. This was the cradle of civilization after the flood. Why? Human beings must have water. So they came to this water source, and they spread down the valley, and they filled up the whole valley. Down here was Ur of the Chaldees. This was the cradle of civilization. Now, this is part of what is known as the Fertile Crescent. It's called a crescent because of what we call a crescent moon. They don't do this much anymore, but when I was a boy, they would always put a crescent moon on the outhouse. On the outhouse, you had a little crescent moon up at the top. I'd never have figured out why they put it there, but that was a little crescent. So this was like the shape of a crescent moon, which I think you would probably call a quarter moon. Now, this is part of the Fertile Crescent, meaning it has water. Well, that's a straight line, but it bends over this way, because right up here, you've got the upper headwater tributary system of the Jordan. It flows down to here, but the Dead Sea won't let it flow any further here, so you've got water down through here. So if you take this and extend it across, it's what's known as the Fertile Crescent. Now, some run it on across into Egypt. I don't think that's right, but, you know, if they do, fine. If they don't. But I think this is what is known as the Fertile Crescent. This would be a perfect hydrological watering system in Israel, and Israel would have never had any problems whatsoever with producing tremendous, unbelievable amounts of botanical products. The only thing that had ever hampered Israel is this one little section you see here in yellow. This section goes from the northern extension of the Gulf of Aqaba up to the Dead Sea. And the problem is its high elevation. It's a higher elevation than the Dead Sea. Since water can't flow uphill without some type of a magnificent force pushing it, the water tends to get into the Dead Sea, sit there and stagnate, and it sits there for a long time. The Jordan keeps bringing down more and more salt content from along its banks. The salt then becomes more and more prolific in the Dead Sea, and now I believe the Dead Sea is about 27% salt. It may be even higher than that. It might be 37. At my age, I forget, but I think it's about 27 or 28% salt. So you can't use that water. It's just too salty. And so because they can't use the waters of the Dead Sea, all they've got is this freshwater source up here. Now, if you were to rip open this area from the Gulf of Aqaba northward up to the Dead Sea and have something to flush out that salt water that's in there, this would be the perfect watering system. You would have the Euphrates going right across here, going right down through here, not being allowed to build up any salt in the Dead Sea, going straight on through when this is ripped open and eventually draining into the Red Sea. That's exactly what God indicates in His Word that He's going to do. Now, all I've done is this. God says certain things are going to happen. Okay, that settles it. They're going to happen. All I do as a geologist is show you what God has done in the earth to structure it ahead of time to do exactly what He said He would do. I don't do this to impress you with the technicality of it. And a lot of times people lose sight of why I do this. I know that what I'm showing you is true. You may or may not believe it, but I know it's true. Now, what advantages they got? How do you think I've stayed here for 26 years? You don't know what I've been through here. You think you do, but you don't. The way I've stayed here is this. What I'm showing you, God has planned, told us He's going to do in advance. So anytime I start to get discouraged, anytime I start to get disheartened, anytime I just feel like, what's the use? I ask myself, who are you working for? You're working for someone who parted the waters of the Red Sea. You're working for someone who's going to split the land all the way up the Jordan Valley. You're working for someone who's going to crush the tongue of the Egyptian Sea. You're working for someone who put the Palmyra Falls and faults in there where He's going to divert the Euphrates River across. You're working for somebody that has all power. And you're not just working for somebody that's big and powerful and terrible. He's all that. But you're working for somebody that knows what He's doing, because He's planned all this and He's put it in the earth ahead of time. So then I just say, Lord, forgive me, and I get back on track and everything's fine. A lot of people never really understand just how great and marvelous and wonderful God is. I don't pretend to say that I have, but I know this much. I'm a lot more impressed with Him now than I was when He first called me to preach. And I know that many preachers never come to realize just how wonderful God truly is. Now, I am not a man who believes something just because he was taught it. I'm a man who believes something because the Bible proves it to him. And one of the biggest problems I've had in our work has been that many missionary Baptist preachers, quite frankly, are just a little bit afraid of me. because they're afraid that I'm going to say something or do something that's going to upset their apple cart where they pastor. I go out of my way not to do that. And when I go somewhere, I never preach about the rapture. I never teach about the rapture. I just leave that alone. I wouldn't hurt anybody for anything. But I am not going to learn something in the Bible that I know is the truth and keep it to myself if I believe God means for me to share it. And I have unloaded here everything that I believe on you, because this is the only church that God called me to pastor, and it's the only one I'm really responsible for. Now, what I'm saying is that God intends to divert the Euphrates River right here at the Palmyra Falls and Falls. It'll go right down through here. Now, I'm going to show you many scriptures to prove that what I'm telling you is true before I'm finished. So we're looking at Revelation 16 and 12, and we're looking at Isaiah 11, 15, and 16. I've already gone over these, and the main reason God is doing this is to provide a highway for the people to go up and worship at the millennial reign. Now, most missionary Baptist preachers have taught for so long and been taught by TV evangelists, and they have shared all it among themselves, that for me to tell them that kings of the East could be anybody except the Red Chinese Army is almost heresy. And they just can't stand me for it. It's like I have done something and defiled their sacred teaching. But the truth of the matter is, they believe it because they were taught it, and that's the only reason they believe it. We are products of our teaching. Well, I'm a product of my teaching, and I thank God for all those missionary Baptist preachers that taught me. But I'm sure they didn't mean for me to just accept it because they said so. You say, well, Brother McElmurray, why do you believe that's not? Well, first of all, we're not the first preachers that ever came along that God called. There was a time in history when preachers were equally certain it was Attila the Hun. And believe me, it made just as much sense to be Attila the Hun at that time as it does to be Communist China today. And then after that, another group of preachers arose, and they were just as God called as we are. And they taught it was Attila the Hun. Not Attila the Hun, but Genghis Khan. Genghis Khan, the second group, the first group taught Attila the Hun, then Genghis Khan, who came across out of the Mongolian Empire in China, and everybody thought, that's who these kings of the East are. They have to be that group. I don't believe that, and I'm going to show you why. Now, I'm retired from the National Security Agency in 1971. That gives me a tremendous advantage in interpreting Bible prophecy. You may not think so, but it does. I'm also a graduate of the Orlando Military Academy. I know military statistics and statics, and I know military stratums. I also know how military armies operate. I also know the strength of the Red Chinese Army. Now, I want you to take a look at where China is. And I want you to take a look at that red arrow that goes across to Israel. This scripture says that God dries up the Euphrates River, that the way of the kings of the East might be prepared. Clearly, it means that it's going to dry up so that it will be easy to go across. Get you a map when you go home, if you're up to it, feel like it, want to, and go from right here in China, straight across Tibet, on across Bangladesh, on across Pakistan, northern India, Pakistan, go across Iran, go across Iraq. Count the number of rivers that are across there. Get their names, then look up what the rivers are like in the encyclopedia. Listen, there are very formidable rivers in here that are very fast moving and very difficult to ford to get across. So why would God dry up this one river for the Red Chinese Army when the Red Chinese Army is way over here and you've got all these other rivers that are much more formidable? Furthermore, in this day in which we live, in the year 2000, the Red Chinese could put a pontoon bridge across there, a pontoon bridge across there, that would handle the largest tank they've got. And they could put it across that real shallow river, because it's one of the shallowest rivers over there, because of all the topwater silt that brings down from the mountains. They could put that across there in a matter of hours that would carry the heaviest tank they've got. The Euphrates River, militarily, is of absolutely no consequence whatsoever to an advancing army. But these back here in this area, and that's a long area, and all these many rivers in through here, they're very formidable. And you wouldn't lay a pontoon bridge across a fast-moving river like that. So why in heaven's name would God dry up the Euphrates so that it would make it easier for them to come across? It doesn't make any sense at all if you understand what the situation is. Furthermore, The Tigris moves faster than the Euphrates. It is much more difficult to go across. So why doesn't God dry up the Tigris? You see, the only ones he's really interested in are the kings of the east. The sons of Keturah went back, Abraham's sons, and they settled between the Tigris and Euphrates River and became known as the kings of the east. So the only reason he's drying up this river is so that the kings of the east during the millennial reign will be able to come up and worship him in Israel, and he's going to crush the tongue of the Egyptian sea so that all the people for 1,000 years during the millennial reign are going to be allowed to come up and worship him there. Now, I don't make any bones about it. I used to say, well, it might be Red China. It is not. And I tried to be Mr. Nice Guy for a long time, but I'm 67 years old. I probably don't have long to live, and I think the Lord's coming relatively soon, so I might as well be honest about it. There are others, some that misconceptions about drying up a river. It was taught by many missionary Baptist preachers, one in particular, that this series of dams that were being built in Turkey after World War II were going to be what dried up the Euphrates River. Now, I don't mean to sound like Mr. Know-It-All or to make people mad or to be bigoted, but that is absolutely ridiculous. A lot of preachers don't know anything about hydrology. They don't know anything about dams. I do. That was what I was trained to be involved in. So to say that a dam can stop a river is absolutely ridiculous. And I'm going to show you why. President Saddam Hussein of Iraq announced the opening of the Saddam River, a 350-mile canal between Baghdad and Basra, and between the Euphrates and Tigris rivers to drain the southern marshes and make the vast wetlands accessible to the Iraqi army battling Shiite Muslim rebels, the official Iraqi news agency said. Now, you can divert a river. You can divert it. And you can slow the flow of it. But you cannot dam up a river and completely stop it. Now, you'll see why I say that in about 2 shakes of a sheep's tail. After I told people when I first began this lecture series in 1978, and I guess for several years I had been telling people you couldn't dam up a river. Well, these articles came out, and I got calls from all the preachers that aren't overly fond of what I teach, telling me, oh, see, you didn't know what you were talking about. These articles came out. Euphrates flow stopped. Ooh. Cut the flow of the Euphrates River. They looked at the headlines, picked up the phone, and called me. Euphrates shut off word of Syria. Cut off the flow of the Euphrates River. Ooh. And everybody said, see, you can't do it. Even though I had clearly proven to them, you can't. Well, if they just read a little further on down, they would have realized you can't cut off the flow of a river. For 1 month, reduced water, 1/4 of the regular flow. You can do that. That's what we do right out here at the dam system. We have them down the Arkansas. But you can't dry up the Arkansas River. Now let's take a look at the series of dams that you see here that start off in Turkey and go all the way down to the Persian Gulf where this empties in. These are the series of dams. It's still flowing, the water. You can see the dams. The water builds up behind them, builds up behind them, builds up behind them, builds up behind them, but it's still flowing. You can't stop a river. I'm sure many of you boys, and some of you tomboys, you may have gone out when you were a child and you may have decided you were going to dam up that little creek. Some of the boys and I used to do that when I was growing up. And man, we'd get up there and we'd build a dam, we'd bring rocks, we'd bend mud, we'd just be building, 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 building. And at first we'd stop it and it would drop down below it. Then we'd have to build it higher and higher and higher and higher, and the water just kept building up, and pretty soon it'd go over the top. You can control the flow of a river, but you can't stop it. You can divert it, but you can't stop it. And to say that dams are going to cut off the flow and no more water, that is absolute, abject, hydrological insanity. First of all, I object to the principle because it has man doing it. Many missionary Baptist preachers are determined to let man do the destroying. That is not true. God's going to do it all by himself, and when this is over, God is going to get all the glory, all the honor, and all the recognition. I used to pussyfoot around on this and try to be Mr. Nice Guy, but I discovered that I could not pacify nor placate my brothers in the faith. And because of that, I have many enemies in missionary Baptist churches, preachers who have never met me but do not like me because I teach things that conflict with what they have taught the people. Well, I'm tired of it. And so I've just made up my mind. I'm going to call a spade, a diamond, a rock, and if people like it, fine, and if they don't like it, fine. As long as I think God likes it, that's all I'm interested in. Now, let's take a look at this area. The colors here indicate height of topography. God made the earth, and this is the way the earth exists today. Right here is the Sea of Galilee. A little further on down here, not shown, is the Dead Sea. See right across here? See that darker green area? That's where all those folds were. Those folds and those faults, they're called the Palmyra folds and faults. Right here is the upper headwater tributary system of the Jordan. Now, the darker the green is, the lower the elevation. The darker the brown is, the higher the elevation. The Euphrates River starts right up here. Comes out of two streams right here. It goes roaring down through here very rapidly. All of a sudden, when it gets right here, it loses all that elevation, the gradient, the speed of the water, suddenly stops. Well, fast-moving water can carry a lot of sediment, a lot of silt, a lot of impurities. Slow-moving water can't. So when it suddenly decelerates, all this sediment begins to deposit out. Right here is where it suddenly stops its gradient. Now, the only reason right now, while I'm speaking to you, that the Euphrates continues to go all the way down through here and eventually enters into the Persian Gulf is because right here, the land right here is just a little bit higher, just a little bit lower, right across here. And because it's lower and water follows gravity, the Euphrates continues to flow. This is just a little bit too high right in here for it to go down through here. Well, you've got the Palmyra folds and faults that God put in there. When the earthquake occurs, this is going to break wide open across here. The Euphrates is simply going to flow right down here. It's going to go all the way down through the river. God structured it to do it. Would I say this was going to happen if I didn't have the Bible telling me the Euphrates was going to dry up? Would I say this if I didn't have the Bible telling me that all the rivers of Judah were going to flow with water? Why, certainly, I would not. But because the Bible says that, it's going to happen. Here's that little section right up here. Right across here, the Palmyra folds and faults. When this valley rips open all the way across here, this whole piece of the earth's crust, which floats on underground liquid lakes of rock called magma, the Sinai Peninsula, is going to float over and bang against the African continent. You say, well, things don't happen like that. They've been happening like that ever since God made the earth. That's not brand new. It's doing it every day. Now, when this rips open right across here, it's going to allow all this water to go right down through here. And you're going to have a perfect hydrological watering system. You know, I got my time off that Channel 3, and there must be something wrong with that time. There must be, because I do it every morning. I think they've gone crazy over there. What time have you got, Charlie? 10:40. A typical San Diego Marine. You Marines have no idea of time. What time have you got?
Quarter till.
What time you got, Anime? Where'd you take your basic training? Did you go to San Diego? What? Okay. Well, all right. I believe that, Hunter. So it's 9:45, huh? Well, now, before I adjust my watch here. Wait, sit down there, Mitch. What time you got? Jack, I didn't ask you. 9:45. Well, that's a long break, isn't it? Okay, we're gonna take up right here. I'm really keeping you off balance this morning. Okay, well, we're going to take up right here, and we'll finish this, Lord willing, next Sunday morning.